Welcome to this portion of Focal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now our guest is Dan Gaynor of the Media Research Center. He is the vice president there, and he focuses on culture. And it's great to have you back on the program, Dan. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. There's so much going on in the world. We're all pulled a lot of different directions.
There really is. Okay, now this will be airing after the Olympics are all over. And yet you point out in one of your articles that the networks have literally covered the faith of the Muslim fencer from the United States 100 times more than the faith of some of the Christian gymnasts. And by the way, I read an article where it even said, and this was not widely reported, that Michael Phelps had his life changed by reading a very strong Christian book, evangelical book by Rick Warren, the one called The Purpose-Driven Life. And yet, I didn't hear that in the mainstream media.
Yeah, this is an interesting Olympics. I have seen more Olympians declare their faith, declare for God, than I've ever seen at any other Olympics. I don't know if that is more of a cultural awakening or if the fact that social media and conservative media mean that things that were not covered by the traditional press are getting out there. But what we looked at is you've got the 5 gold medal gymnastics athletes. Certainly favored going into this. Everybody thought they were very talented. 4 of them are Christian, 1's Jewish. All 5 are open about their faith. When they won, they got a lot of attention. Out of all the attention they got, just 8 seconds. These are athletes who are clearly crediting their faith in God. Just 8 seconds of that on one network attributed to their faith in God. Then you go to the Muslim fencer. I believe if I can say her name correctly, and I apologize if I'm not, I think it's Ibtihaj Muhammad. And she's the first Muslim to wear hijab as an American Olympian. Now, first, I spent decades in journalism. First get covered. But, this is a lot of coverage. She got more than 800 seconds. So 8 seconds for that, more than 800 seconds, where journalists are openly admitting, we don't think she's going to do well, but we want to talk about her faith. Let's talk about her, her views of Islam. And also let's downplay anything that she might have ever said that might be controversial. This day and age, if you're an athlete, the only time anything you say is not controversial is if journalists agree with it. So you can be pro-life and be a controversial figure. You can be pro-Christian and be a controversial figure. But if you are critical of Israel and such as she has been, you're not controversial in the eyes of the media.
That is amazing. That's astounding. And I understand, by the way, that there were 2 divers that were Christians and they gave the glory to the Lord. But that Michael Phelps story, I mean, you'd think that would be huge. I mean, I don't even follow Olympics, but I've even heard of him.
Well, I mean, I'm a Baltimore guy. And Michael Phelps, we are mightily proud of Michael Phelps. And that story, got attention locally, but even then, not a lot. Because one of the lessons they say for writers is to write what you know. And there was a time where people in the American press understood faith because they had friends who were religious. They themselves might go to church. And now I can tell you, even as far back in the 90s, when I would work in newsrooms, you come in Monday and nobody had gone to church. Nobody in the newsroom at all.
Right.
There was an investigation, I think one of the Carolina papers did, into a mega church in its area. And it became a little controversial. People were very critical of it. And they said, one of the criticisms was they were not well tied into the community and they didn't understand some of the nuances of the church. They said, we made sure that someone in our newsroom who is Christian read the piece. And the only person they could find was somebody who worked in the design department, not anybody actually reporting or editing. Mm-hmm. They couldn't find somebody who went to church in either one of those categories.
Yeah, in other words, it's sort of like in production, we use the phrase above the line and below the line. The above the line people would be the writers, the directors, the producers, the on-air talent, the coordinators, the guests or whatever. Well, actually, I guess the coordinator could fit in the below the line part. But the below the line people would be the, you know, the audio man, the cameraman or woman or, you know, whatever. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah. Or the production assistants, that kind of thing. So, the people who regulate the content, would be the ones like you're talking about in the newsroom. It reminds me of that old famous statement from Nicholas Kristof. At least he was honest about it, where Nicholas Kristof of the New York Times said, you know, I don't know of any evangelical anywhere in any major paper, something to that effect. Remember that statement?
Oh, yeah. And you see those kind of statements. When journalists are honest, they make statements like that all the time. It is an ignorance of what's going on in the world. There was in a similar way politically. If you saw David Brooks earlier this year, admitted, David Brooks, the columnist for the New York Times, for people don't
He's sort of the quasi-conservative, right? He's
a lot more quasi than conservative. I say this as somebody who used to work with David. I knew him at the Washington Times, not well, but I knew him. But he wrote a piece talking about how everybody was caught off guard by support for Donald Trump. And he said it's because, basically, we didn't know anybody who supported Donald Trump. That he admitted to living somewhat in a New York bubble. And, of course, yes, he does live in a New York bubble. He's one of the token conservatives for the nation's most prominent liberal media outlet. And you're in New York. New York is not New York. Washington and Hollywood are not like anywhere else in the country.
Yeah,
they are. Or essentially anywhere. Maybe San Francisco a little bit, or Chicago. But they stand out. I work near Washington, but I live near Baltimore, and I can tell you it's almost like I cross a border somewhere along the way because it's very different. You have more people who are working class, who actually have jobs, who don't just work for government, or are not working in lobbying, or not earning six-figure incomes, and I think what's happened is the American media are so detached from the way ordinary people live that they've gone from being detached to disdainful,
mm-hmm.
And so anything that smacks of let's cite President Obama holding close to their God and their guns, anything like that, journalists feel creeped out by.
Mm-hmm. Very good point. Now, you had another little comment recently about how there's the sin of omission on the part of the American media can actually be deadly in the sense of being silent and not reporting on anti-Christian genocide. Tell us about
that. This is one of the most important stories we've done in my 12 years at the MRC. We looked, you see around the world, if you pay attention to what goes on for Christians around the world, but particularly in the Mideast, we are watching Christianity being purged from the Mideast to the point where the Pope has even warned about it. That the place where Christianity was founded, it can't be purged from. But nevertheless, ISIS and radical Islam are working to purge Christians from Syria, Iraq, Lebanon, Libya, Egypt. And so, gradually over time, the EU declared it a genocide, House of Representatives declared it a genocide, eventually our own government declared it a genocide. It restated that point in the State Department's annual view of religion that just came out just the other day. And so we looked at 2.5 years of network coverage where we found 60 stories that kind of talk about some of the bad things happening to Christians. Just 6 of those stories in 2.5 years mentioned the word genocide. That is, on average, one story per network more than every other year. So you're not even getting one a year from the networks. That's It's appalling. When we say the terms, never again, and I've met numerous Holocaust victims. You know, Baltimore is a very strong Jewish community, and I've met a bunch of Holocaust victims. When we say never again, it doesn't just mean we don't want people who are like Nazis to kill Jewish people anymore. We're not going to tolerate another genocide. But the media are perfectly happy in this country to tolerate a genocide rather than point out inconvenient facts that point fingers at who's doing the genocide. And genocide's being done by Muslims. Mm. That's a fact. It is.
Didn't John Kerry even acknowledge that, yeah, this is genocide?
Yes. And 6 stories on 4 different days, because a couple of stories when people would make statements, those are the days that they mentioned it. It's like they refuse to connect the dots. When ISIS kills Christians, when Muslims burn out Coptic Christians in Egypt, when Boko Haram kills Christians, it's like they don't want to say, well, wait a second, what do these all have in common? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's right. They're all Muslim. The Christian population in Iraq has dropped from more than 1 million to, I think, a little over 100,000.
Wow.
90%,
maybe.
Many have left. But, that what happens to the Mideast when Christianity is purged? Does the purge then move to someplace else? Because the purgers are only going to feel emboldened. There was a time in our history, in American history, where we stood up and were counted when monstrous things happened in the world. And now not only are we as a nation not standing up, as our politicians refuse to do so, the president refuses to do anything, but the media are not even standing up and telling people that this is going on.
Well, as a matter of fact, the president goes out of his way to defend Islam and to say that this has nothing to do with Islam. And then he'll say, by the way, we should remember that Christians perpetrated the Crusades, which, we should point out, didn't those end 1300 AD?
Well,
hello?
Also, can we also point out that the Crusades were a reaction to radical Islam even then?
Yeah, 450 years after the beginning of the conquests from Islam.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why Crusades happened. Islam, when you hear ISIS referred to ISIL, it refers to Islamic State of Iraq and Levant. For people who don't know the Levant stretched as far away as Greece, stretching around through Turkey, through Syria, Israel, Egypt, Libya, all the way to the tip of North Africa, cross over into Gibraltar, into Spain, and you remember it was Charles Martel who stopped the Islamic incursion into Europe.
Yeah, in France,
right.
Not too far from Paris, really.
When they talk about the restoration of the Levant, that's what they want. They want an Islamic State that wipes out everybody, Christians, Jews, Hindus, Muslims they don't agree with, or whoever, from that whole area. They envision, ISIS has a very apocalyptic vision of the world. They want a confrontation with other world religions. They want to fight that battle. And right now, what's happening is simply Christians are on the receiving end. It's not a battle. It's a genocide.
Yeah. Do you think that, in effect, the president using the term ISIL as opposed to ISIS is, in effect, siding with the pro-Islam side of things just by the term itself?
I've heard that argued. I think it's more of a... I think it's more of an attempt to downplay it. I think ISIS gained some degree of popularity in the culture before Obama started referring to the group.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think they chose to refer to it as ISIL simply to, as kind of...
downgrade to downgrade the JV team, if you will. Okay.
Yeah, as a smokescreen. I don't think it's anything more nefarious than that.
Okay. Dan Gaynor, Media Research Center, MRC.org for more information. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Bye-bye.